this morning's sermon, message, talk, depending on whatever it is you want to call it, is directed at the question of who we are as Unitarian Universalists. I will admit to you that for the first half of the sermon, it seems to be non-responsive to the question that I claim to be wrestling with. But for those of you who are old-timers, you will trust me. For those of you who are first-timers, stick with me for a while and I'll try to earn your trust. Last week, as I indicated by pouring the Lake Michigan water into our water communion, I was in Chicago. And one of the things that I love doing, being a fish person, is going to aquariums. And I went to the wonderful Shedd Aquarium in Chicago on the lake, an absolutely gorgeous facility. I got into a conversation with some of the docents. I got a behind stage or behind tank tour. I got to look at the hospitals for the sick fish and all of the, and then went into the dining commons, and always have this ambivalent sense when I see fish on the menu, both in the sense of irony and the provenance of it. Where did this fish come? Where was it last night? Anyway, one of the high points of the experience was the coral reef. And I'm a diver, and I love coral reefs. And one of the docents was an underwater docent. So she's a dunk docent. And she was in the tank in a wetsuit with a mask and a microphone in the mask. And she was talking to all of the kids and all of the adults who were outside the tank about the complex ecosystem and what it takes to keep that tank balanced, all of the chemicals, all of the filtration, all of the life, and the interdependence of all of those wonderful and beautiful creatures. That the reef itself is alive. Coral is alive, and it is life built on the shells, on the remnants of past lives, of coral that is no longer living as it builds up and builds up as a living organism and part of a greater system. There were trigger fish and tangs and file fish, and an eel lurked in a crevice. All kinds of beautiful colors and patterns and diversity in this reef tank. And the docent asked the question of the adults and children, who can tell me what's the most important animal in this tank? And somebody raised their hand and said, the coral, which was the right answer, or at least it was the answer that she was looking for. The answer that I kept to myself was, you're the most important creature in the tank. You have the power as a human being, as a person, as a woman, to knock over the coral with a flipper, to not service the tank, to unplug the filters, to let the UV sterilizer go, to let the system become polluted, deoxygenated, and let all of it die. That human beings have this immense, enormous power in our world. And we need to own it with humility, not with arrogance. And not with denial. Oh, we are just another creature. We are just another creature. But our power to choose, to act, to impact, to reason for short spurts of time is so enormous that we have to, I believe, begin our sense of connection by admitting who we are and what kind of power we have over that reef, over that tank, over our world, over all of the life and each other. Human beings, once upon a time, a few years ago, tended to look at ourselves, I think, with a certain sense of superiority and arrogance. The first iteration in the late 19th century, early 20th century of humanism tended to accept our power, but not necessarily look at the balanced side of what human beings are. That the thinkers of the partial enlightenment of the change from the 19th to the 20th century, when you went through old Unitarian hymnals, you would see, man is the measure of all things. Man is the earth upright and proud. Man maketh, and it was man, and not simply in a gender-specific way, but in a sense of acknowledging power, but without quite grasping all of the nuances of our responsibility to each other. There was such tremendous optimism at the turn of the 19th to the 20th century that human beings with reason and with science were going to solve all of the problems. War would be no more. Pollution would be a thing of the past. Diseases would be wiped out. And with all of that, and with the pure enlightenment of human reason, all of those superstitious systems and those primitive religions would be cast into the dustbin of history, and we would proceed, do not collect 200, do not pass, go to paradise. Well, intellectual honesty demands that we look at the 20th century to see how so many utopian dreams became dystopian realities. What went wrong with the century? My purpose today is not to give the answer to that question, but it seems to me that there was a certain amount of magical thinking, that science automatically led to change, which was automatically progress. And reason would automatically lead us somehow to a more goodly world. And when we look at what actually happened, at how the brilliance of the human mind was turned to fission and fusion, and cancer still exists, how we failed in our reach to create that utopia that so many of my parents' generation believed was the birthright of us and our children. And we have to ask ourselves, what can we do to make some of those things come true? I think that one of the problems, looking at the issues in religion about how we see ourselves in the world and how we see ourselves related to nature, is kind of instructive. When you look at the Genesis story, it seems clear that God was guilty of some serious errors in judgment in giving human beings dominion over the earth, because we didn't take that, what in Protestantism is called stewardship, very seriously. And there are many today who don't take the issues of stewardship and ecology very seriously, because this world is seen as somehow corrupt. This world, because of its material nature and the fact that human beings age and die and material things fall apart, there was the Greek belief that there would be something better, something ideal, another dimension, and that when God comes to the accompaniment of trumpet by Gabriel and destroys everything that we haven't destroyed yet, it won't be much of a job for God, I'm afraid, there will be a great and perfect and eternal spiritual world. The separation of the spiritual from the material is, in my view, one of the tragic errors of human history. If we cannot see the marvel and the miracle in creation, the spiritual becomes simply an abstraction. if we can't see that we ourselves are miraculous, even if we understand the physiology, how is it that we will learn to treasure each other? How is it that we will learn to treasure and care for this earth, this world? If only reality is, the ultimate reality is eternal and spiritual and ideal, why should we learn? Why should we become better people? Why should we care for our world with a sense of active stewardship and a sense of not the arrogance of the first iteration of humanism, but the humility of the second iteration? I am a humanist. I believe that our impact is so important, but the task is a task to be undertaken not with a sense of hubris, but a sense of optimism and a sense of humility, because we don't always know what it is that we're doing. But we must know that life, this world, these are critical issues and responsibilities for all of us during all of our lifetimes. There couldn't have been a more appropriate anthem sung, because our lives, whatever people believe about another life, another universe, another solar system, the nature of time, whatever happens in our lives, like pebbles dropped in water, our lives send out ripples far beyond their points of entry and departure. So that what we do today is so critical. So who are we? We are people who believe in this life, at least. We are people who believe that what we do is important to each other and important to the future. We are people who believe in education, in helping our children learn and become better people and to build a better world. We are people who believe in the job of completing the renovation of the schoolroom, and that, yes, destruction is part of creation, but you got to finish the part. And we are called to finish that other part, to build upon ruins. We are people who believe that whatever religions people espouse, that those religions are practiced, not simply believed. Believing a confession, believing a creed, believing a faith doesn't automatically make somebody religious. It is by our fruits that we are known. It is by what we do as human beings to help, to hold, to heal each other and the world. And these strains are interwoven in every religious faith, in the best of those faiths. Who are we? We as Unitarian Universalists believe in life, believe in this life, believe in each other, believe in a process where we have abilities to choose and to make a difference. We are part of a larger tank, if you will, that the power that we have to make a difference shows up in every drop of water. We can pollute, and that pollution shows up in a glacier, in the ocean, in a human cell. We can clean, and we can maintain, and we can empower each other to fix and to heal this world that humanity has done so much to wound and to injure. We can do it with a sense of humility, with a sense that we know that we don't know everything, but we still have to try to make that difference. We have to know that as part of that great reef system, that we are swimming in the same waters. We are the same waters as we float through the void of space. The opening readings were beautiful. They reminded me of the great song, Lost in the Stars, that we are this globe of water, these creatures of water, spinning through the stars. We are not simply passengers. We are not simply isolated fish, but we, of all creatures that we know, and there may be creatures that we don't know, have some ability to go beyond our instincts and to care for each other and to love each other and to choose to kill or not to kill, to heal or not to heal, on something other than simply an instinctual basis. We are creatures with choices. And we, as Unitarian Universalists, recognize the power of those choices and accept as best we can the consequences of those choices. We know that we are not perfect people. When people come to church and complain that their church, their temple, their mosque is filled with hypocrites who fall short of the glory, sure, we all fail. We all miss our targets from time to time. We all get weary and discouraged and look at that world and it just seems to be too big, too complex, too broken to even begin to engage. But that's why we come together. That's why we sing together. That's why when a congregation sings, the importance goes way beyond issues of lyrics, despite all the editing that Unitarian Universals do in our heads when they're the wrong words and we don't agree with them. The importance of the singing is all of these sometimes weak voices, sometimes voices with only the vaguest relationship to the pitch, are joined together and create a buzz and create a music and create an experience that we are together much more than the sum of our parts. 100 weak voices in different keys can create chords and harmonies and art and music. And a weak voice can be lifted by a strong voice. And when some strong voice becomes weak, it can be lifted by a bunch of voices around it. That's who we are. We are people who know that we are not alone. We are not alone in our journeys. We are not alone in our triumphs. As our candles indicate, we are not alone in our tragedies either. That we share a planet and a life, as well as the air and the water together. And how we use this time, the ripples that we create will have power beyond our imagination. As Unitarian Universalists, we do not seek, because we know much too well that we would fail, we do not seek to sing the same note. Sometimes it's not clear if we're singing the same song or being accompanied by the same music. But nonetheless, what we do is we sing. We try to sing our lives, sing our body electric, sing our universe, sing the song of the spheres that relate us to each other as well as to an eternity that we cannot even grasp with our minds. Science, religion do not have to be in opposition. The philosopher Ludwig Wittgenstein said, it is not how the world is that is the mysterious, the mystical, but that it is. The how the world is science. The that it is awe, wonder, and poetry. And we need science and we need poetry. We need all of these things to fill our hearts and to give us the energy to engage this world, to be the difference to each other that we can be. The book of Revelations ends on a rather disturbing note, whether you take it literally or poetically. It ends by saying that the mountains will be brought down, the valleys will be filled in, and the sea will be no more. It's a very nice Greek image of perfection. It's a perfect sphere, but it's devoid of life, of soul, of all of the bumps and the dangers and the travails that make life worth engaging. Yes, we have the power to bring the mountains down with our machines, to tame nature, as early 19th century people believed was the job of human beings. We have the power to fill the valleys in. We have the power to destroy the sea. We also have the power not to, and the ability to choose not to. We have the ability to say, let's save that sea, let's clean that ocean, let's make that lake filled with life and air again so that fish can swim freely. Let's make our skies clear and blue so that we can breathe. And you know, if we can do that, some of those diseases that we thought we would conquer a century ago, we might indeed conquer by cleaning up our world and taking care of this reef. We are the most important creatures in the reef, not for a theological reason, but because we have the power to make choices. We have to know we swim with an entire universe. We share our fairly small planet, and we have enormous power. We can take that with a sense of owning it and a sense of humility and say yes to life. Say yes to this material life and say yes to all of the consequences and all of the ripples that we make as individuals and the strength to make those differences when we are together, our voices joined, our hands joined, our lives linked in a chain of progress that is thoughtful. That's who we are. Not singing the same note, but looking for harmony as we lead our lives together, looking for strength, company, and encouragement. We are not perfect, and we sometimes fail, but we aim high. And part of that aim is to not simply accept or tolerate difference, but to acknowledge, to celebrate, and to be enriched by the fact that we do not sing the same note, but all of those notes together create something wonderful.